Well, God bless you guys. Good morning. Hey, we're going to do some fun stuff today in the continuation of our conversation about marriage. If you weren't here last week, make sure that you hop online. You can go to mysummit.community. That's not actually our name. Is that our name? That is. That's our website right there, mysummit.community. And log on to the website, and you can watch the message series there. Also, a really super convenient way to do it wherever you're at is to go and get our app. And if you have a smartphone, then it's really easy to do. You just go to your app store, whether it's an Android app store or Apple app store, and you just put Summit Church Lincoln, and you're going to see our logo and download that. And you can just go to messages and watch that. You can actually pull up your notes right now on that app. But we're going to continue an important conversation we started last week with therapist Tony Overbay. And so here's a question I get a lot. People ask this, well, if I'm not married, what difference does it make to hear a message like this? Or I'm divorced, or I'm widowed, or I'm single. And the answer is this, if you are going to, at any other point in your life, be in a relationship that resembles marriage, if you're going to be dating at any point, if you're going to get engaged at any point, and if you're going to get remarried or married at any point, then you should be well prepared. The better thing is to go into a relationship prepared instead of reacting later on when things aren't going that well. Does everybody agree with that? And then if things aren't going well or you need to make some improvements in your relationship, you need to add some strength or health to your relationship, then there's no better time than right now to do it. The best time to plant a tree, 25 years ago. Second best time, right now. So if you haven't made good changes in your finances, in your faith, in your family, now is the time to do it. And so that's the kind of conversation we're having right now. And so I'm going to continue the conversation we're having about marriage. And I'm going to use a little bit of an illustration if I can. Pull out your notes if you don't already have them out. We're going to be spending a little bit of time talking about what you're owed in your marriage. So let me move this here because this is going to be a helpful resource for us in just a second. And let me move this over here, because this is going to be a helpful resource right now. Every one of us has been convinced, at least over the course of our marriage, or at some point in our marriage, or maybe even right now in our marriage, that in the course of our marriage, we're owed something. The question is, where do we get that idea from? And is that an idea worth holding on to? And I want to tell you that you should believe that you are owed something in your marriage. By the end of this, I'm going to tell you exactly what you're owed in your marriage. So there should be some sort of an agreement in any relationship that you are owed something. The question is, what is that? Because if you don't know the answer to that question, then you don't get to move towards the same goal. And it's especially important in a marriage relationship because it's the one unique relationship that we have voluntarily committed to for the rest of our lives. There's no other relationship in which we do that, except, of course, our relationship with Christ. But no earthly relationship do we commit to other than the one that we do with our spouse. For instance, you didn't voluntarily commit to a lifetime relationship with your parents. You were sort of born into that, right? So you're related by blood. They're going to be your parents. Even if you don't have a good relationship, you're committed to that relationship. You'll never stop being their child. They'll never stop being your parents. And the same with our children. We have children. They're always going to be our children. Marriage, on the other hand, is the one we voluntarily walk into. And so when we walk into it, when we make that commitment, my question is, are we always prepared to follow through with the expectations that we have of each other? So the question we're going to ask today is, am I getting what I'm owed? When I feel like my spouse isn't giving me what I'm owed, number one, write this into your notes, my desires will become my expectations. When I don't feel like I'm getting what I'm owed, my desires will become my expectations. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. These are our desires. In here, represents what happens to us when we go into a date, even before we begin to date someone, especially girls begin to anticipate and think about and dream about what their husband's gonna be like, what marriage is gonna be like, what their dating relationships are gonna be like, and we begin to imagine those things. And then when we get into a dating relationship, especially as it's getting serious and we're moving towards marriage, and maybe there's an engagement happening and we get engaged, we start dreaming together. We desire similar things, right? We love things like romance. Even men are good at romance early in the relationship. You heard the subtle timing that I threw in there. Men are good at it. Men buy things like this. It represents something meaningful, and we care, and we buy cards, and we write love letters, and we text loving texts to each other. We Instagram each other romantic memes. It's a wonderful thing, right? We get married, and men, you hope some of that romance converts into, right? I don't even know how to hold this. How do I hold that? All right, there we go. Yes, that'll fit. All right, so not only do we want romance in our marriage, we want some sexual intimacy in our marriage. So we dream about what that's going to be like. We desire that it's always going to be roses and flowers and candy and cards and loving text and exchange. And then when we come home, we're going to make passionate love all day until we're exhausted. This is before kids, of course, because none of this exists after kids. We dream about the fact that we're going to make a lot of money. We're going to have a comfortable life. We're going to have the things that we want. We're going to go on the vacations that we want to go on. And then, of course, maybe we're going to finally own the first nice car. Maybe it's going to be a minivan or an SUV, but we think this is what it's going to look like. We're going to have romance all the time. We're going to have sex all the time. We're going to have the money that we need. We're going to have the nice car that we can drive and sort of show up to parties with our friends. And then maybe after a few years, we're going to introduce, thank you for the couple who let me use their baby this morning. It's very well-behaved child. Maybe we have one of these or two of these or three of these. This is the dream we have. We desire these kind of things together. And then long enough, she's sleeping. Don't worry about her. After maybe 10 years, we save up. We buy ourselves some nice toys. We get some jet skis or a boat, an RV, right? These are the things that we dream about what marriage looks like. But after too long, these things begin to make their way into a different category in our life, and they're called expectations. So after a little while, we don't see things like this as often as we want to. We move it into the expectation pile, and maybe men and women start saying there's not the sexual intimacy there once was. And wait a second, we're not making the money that we once did. And this is not the car I was expecting to drive. And wait a second, we've waited too long, or we started too early having kids. And you know what? We're going to have to go into debt if we want something like that. But I still want it because that's the deal I was promised. You see, when we move it from here, desires and dreams, into expectations, there's a new standard by which we see the other person. They are either fulfilling their expectation or they're not meeting their expectation. One of the two things is happening. And here's the mental transition that happens with that. We move from our marriage being a covenant to our marriage being a contract. A covenant is something we willingly went into together based on the dreams and desires that we had together, that were born in us together. But when we move our dreams and desires into expectations, then we see the other person as failing to have met the contractual agreement. You're my wife. You owe me respect. You owe me sex and intimacy. You owe me food when I get home. You owe me well-behaved and well-cared-for kids. You owe me patience and understanding. You owe me support and encouragement. You owe me some well-deserved time with my friends. You owe me appreciation for how hard I work. You owe me a clean house. And the list goes on. And we have this box of expectations that we say, this was the deal when we got together and when we got married. We talked about all these things together. We dreamed about all these things together. And I don't feel like I'm getting what I'm owed. And wives begin to say, you're my husband. You owe me a nice house that I can make into a home. You owe me romance and affection. You owe me kindness. You owe me trust. You owe me security. You owe me interest in the things that matter to me. You owe me help with the kids. You owe me help around the house. You owe me appreciation for how hard I work. You owe me a listening ear. And that list goes on and on and on. And you think, wait a second, I think those are kind of reasonable things to expect. The things you mentioned aren't bad things. Affection and romance and sex and meals and a clean house and kids and being well cared for and trusted and a listening ear. These are all good things that contribute to a good marriage. Why is it wrong for me to expect those things? I want you to hear this. When our desires become expectations, we allow ourselves to transition our relationship into a debtor kind of relationship. If you always see your spouse as the person who owes you something and is always in debt to you to meet expectations, and you know that they see you the same way, then I want you to hear this. Your relationship cannot maintain trust, romance, and intimacy. You cannot have a debt-debtor relationship, a you owe me and I owe you relationship, and still expect to have trust, romance, and intimacy in your relationship. When's the last time you had an affectionate moment with your mortgage company? Listen, your mortgage company is happy to go years without talking to you as long as you're giving them what you owe to them. But I promise you this, if you want your mortgage company's attention, just start starving them of what you are contractually in agreement to give them. Oh, they'll give you all kinds of attention. You'll get some nicely worded letters. Hello, Mr. Young. We noticed that we hadn't received your mortgage payment for the month of August. I'm sure this is an oversight and it's in the mail. If so, please disregard this letter. September comes along, no mortgage payment. Mr. Young, it's now come to our attention that 2 months have gone by without your mortgage payment. This is distressing for us and we want to make sure everything's okay. Give it 3 months, I'll get a personal call. Some account manager will take a great deal of Mr. Young, I'm so glad we got a hold of you. We've sent you 2 letters and gotten no response from you. They don't care about me. They only care about getting what they're owed. And that's what debt-debtor relationships do. And when you begin to believe about your spouse that they are indebted to you because of some contractual agreement that you made at the altar, that you are owed these things, you have converted your relationship into that debt-debtor relationship. And so in your marriage, unconditional love and trust and intimacy and forgiveness and understanding, those things cannot live inside of that context. Think about it for a second. If your spouse actually met one of your expectations, husbands, you come home with flowers and chocolates and a beautiful card. You spent 15 minutes reading through different cards and you finally picked the perfect one. And you wrote something really lovely in there. And you let that be sitting when your wife got home. She went and picked up the kids somewhere, came home from work. She comes home and she looks at that. What credit do you get for that? None. If it's an expectation, it's good. You finally did what you were supposed to have done. Congratulations, you paid your debt. You're at ground zero. You've just dug yourself out of the hole because I've been waiting for that. You haven't been doing it, and it's about time you made payment on the romance. Maybe it's reversed, and Husbands, you're waiting and expecting and anticipating that your wife is going to give you the kind of affection and attention and appreciation. She finally says, thank you for all the hard work you do. And you go, psh, I've been waiting to hear that for a long time. You could have been saying that all along. I mean, it's not like I just started working hard for the family yesterday. Where is all this coming from? Finally, I get what I deserve. You see, when it's based in expectation, then nobody ever pays off their debt because you're always expecting more from them. And they're never fulfilling your expectations. The Bible tells us that our selfishness will never be satisfied. When we have expectations that we're owed something, it'll never be satisfied. James 4, 1 through 3 says this, where do you think your fighting and endless conflict come from? This isn't just within the context of marriage. Don't you think that they originate in the constant pursuit of gratification that rages inside of each of you like an uncontrolled militia? You crave something that you do not possess. In other words, you're not getting what you believe you're owed. And so you murder to get it. And before you go, I never murdered to get it. Remember that Jesus escalates the definition of all those things. He says, you've heard it said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I tell you, if you lust after a woman in your heart, you've committed adultery. He says, you've heard it said, do not murder. But I tell you that if you've hated a brother in your heart, then you have also murdered. The question is, how far will our hearts go to demand what we're owed? You desire the things you cannot earn, so you sue others and fight for what you want. We live in a you owe me kind of mindset. You do not have because you've chosen not to ask. And when you do ask, you still do not get what you want because your motives are wrong, because you continually focus on self-indulgence. Even when we open up and we communicate, sometimes we communicate the wrong ways and we'll say, why can't you just give me what you owe me? Maybe we don't use those words, but that's exactly what we mean. And so our spouse is not motivated out of love. They're not motivated out of giving us what we need. They're motivated that they just need to pay off debt to us to keep us off their back. We don't want them constantly nagging us. We don't want to constantly be reminded of what a bad spouse we are or how indebted we are to them. And so we just give them what they want so they'll just leave us alone. When I feel like my spouse isn't giving me what I'm owed, number two, my expectations will trigger my decisions. Oh, by the way, there was a house in there that we had. I built that last night. I'm so glad I don't have daughters because that was a miserable, horrible experience. The box said 12 pieces, and I don't know who counted before they put it in the box, but there are more than 12 pieces. There's about 25 pieces. And that's part of our dream that moves into desire, our desire that moves into expectation. So there's a lot of pressure we put on ourselves and each other and even those we don't know as we continue to sort of climb up that ladder, get ourselves in trouble with debt, buy houses we can't afford because it's part of the dream that's now become an expectation. But you can see the difference of what happens when somebody fulfills a dream instead of fulfilling an expectation. That if a wife comes home to find flowers that she dreams and desires, then automatically she's thrilled and excited to see that instead of, where has this been all along? And when a husband desires from his wife a compliment, appreciation, affection in response to something, and he just desires it, he's thrilled when he receives it, instead of going, well, it's about time. Because when we move into that mindset, just as I said, my expectations will trigger my decisions. The biggest probably danger that comes from allowing ourselves to believe that we're owed something, that our spouse is indebted to us, is that our belief about that will trigger the decisions about how we'll behave towards our spouse. And you can see that that's a recipe for disaster because our marriage is based on how we behave towards one another. So let me tell you what I mean. It's easy for me to be me, and it's easy for Lisa to be Lisa, because that's who we are. I'm me, and so I think like me, and I process like me, and I believe like me, and I talk like me, and I act like me. Totally easy. It comes really natural. Right? I don't have to work at being me, and she doesn't have to work at being her. And it's easy for you to be you, and it's easy for your spouse to be your spouse. So here's what happens. If Lisa has to do all of the adjusting, and Lisa behaves more like I want her to behave because it's how I would behave and think like I would think and talk like I would talk and make decisions like I would make decisions, it has taken a huge amount of sacrifice and discomfort for her to do that because that doesn't come naturally to her. And if I have to make those accommodations for her, it doesn't come naturally to me. So it causes great discomfort and there's a lot of personal sacrifice. And in the same situation in your home, you becoming more like your spouse or doing something more like your spouse does requires a lot of energy because it's really easy for us to be ourselves, but it's not easy for us to be our spouse. Is that making sense? So there's a lot that happens. And like Pastor Brian says, you don't have to just sit there and stare. You can actually engage in this and be a part of it and just say out loud things that you're thinking. Well, maybe don't say things out loud that you're thinking in your head. Like, boy, do they need to hear this, right? Don't say things like that. So here's what happens. This all sounds good, and you're thinking, are you telling us that we should be working that hard for each other? Yes and no. Listen to what I'm about to say. What we begin to believe is when I begin to act more like Lisa and I do things her way, I think the scales are tipping too far in her favor. And when you start acting in a way that accommodates the desires and the expectations of your spouse, you see the scales tipping too far in their favor, and guess what we begin to do? We begin to adjust the scales. We begin to make demands that our spouse starts acting like, you know what? No, I'm making the decision on this one. Comes out of nowhere. For a year, we've been fine with them choosing whatever. Then all of a sudden we go, scales have tipped too far. Somewhere internally we've made that decision. Scales, and it's now it's affected my decision making. And I decide I'm actually going to lay down the law. I'm going to put my foot down and I'm going to go, I'm in charge around here. I'm making the decision. I want casserole tonight. That's what, Lisa's like, what? You've never wanted casserole ever in your life? Well, yeah, well, tonight I do. Guess what? I've been letting you make pasta and all kinds of crazy things around here, but tonight it's casserole. I don't even care what kind. Corn dog casserole, tuna casserole, just make sure casserole's in the name of it. Go look up, get online, look up casseroles. I don't care what it is. What is that all about? And I'm on a casserole rampage for a week, and then Lisa goes, you know what? This jerk constantly gets his casserole. We're going to do chicken salad tonight. Because she thinks the scales are tipping too far to my... So here's what happens. Fill this into your notes. When we don't feel like our expectations are being met, our expectations will trigger number one, conflict. Feeling like you're not getting what you're owed or feeling like you're going to be more and more in debt to your spouse and that you're never going to be able to pay off their expectations will lead you to becoming a frustrated and angry person. Have you ever loaned money? Say somebody, you're out with somebody and they go, oh my gosh, I don't have any cash with me. Could I borrow $50? And you go, yeah. Because your expectation is that you're going to be paid back. But listen, not only is your expectation going to be that you're going to be paid back, it's you have a time limit in your head when you're going to be paid back. And you don't want a check or money. You want the cash back that you gave, right? So you've already started building out a list of your expectations about how they're going to pay back their debt to you. And a day goes by and you're like, oh, I'm sure, you know, they're going to get to the 18. They're going to, I know they're busy. And then 2 days go by and 3 days go by and a week goes by. And now you're freaking out because you feel like you need to say something. And you're going, how do you forget you borrowed $50? And then you start building up this case against them that they're purposely ignoring you now. And they're purposely neglecting their debt to you now. And you begin to get frustrated and angry at this person. Never having a conversation, never bringing it up, just based on your expectations, there's a hostility that exists. Now imagine if we'll do that with someone that we just consider a friend, how much more will we go weeks and months even, and maybe even years, feeling like this person owes us something they're not paying, and our frustration and anger level continues to increase. Proverbs 29:22 says, an angry person starts fights. Gavin, hold on just a second. I'll have you come up in just a minute. An angry person starts fight. A hot-tempered person commits all kinds of sin. When you and I get angry, guess what happens? We let that anger out, and we let that become part of the culture of our marriage. So it's going to lead to conflict, or it'll lead to conformity. It's either conflict or conformity. So there's a lot of people who hate conflict. There's a lot of people who will do anything they can to avoid it. I'm going to guess most of you fit into that category. Nobody likes getting into a fight. Nobody, and if you do like it, there's something sort of wrong with you. If you like fighting with people, if you like creating drama, if you like creating conflict, if you love being in the middle of conflict, it's probably not a healthy thing. So most of us exist in the plane of, I would really rather avoid conflict. But that can be just as dangerous. Because here's what we do. We start conforming and behaving differently all so that we can just keep the peace. But guess that, I'm going to tell you, that does something to you on the inside when you're constantly surrendering your voice and your will and your desires so the other person can have theirs just to keep the peace. Because every time I speak up, every time I mention that I'd like it to be different, every time I say what I want, it just blows up into a big thing and I don't want it. I just get this anger from this person. That person's feeling like, finally, I'm getting what I deserve. And you're feeling like, gosh, I always give them what they want. And that begins to crush us inside. It begins to make us sad people. Listen to what Proverbs 15:13 says, a cheerful heart puts a smile on your face, but a broken heart leads to depression. Let me tell you what that means. It's a lot easier to appear happy. When we're happy, we show it. Right? We don't mind walking around happy, but we hide our depression. We hide our sadness. We suppress that. We don't want to cause drama. We don't want to cause conflict. If we're upset and our spouse goes, well, what's the matter with you? And we go, nothing. No, well, you're moping around the house. What's the matter? Clearly something's the matter. And you go, I don't want to get into it. So you just go, nothing, nothing. I'm fine. And guess what that does? It just fuels greater sadness. And it feels like that we have given up the things we once dreamed about together. This thing that was once the ideal of what it would look like to raise our family in a home together, how beautiful and meaningful this would be, has now moved over here. And all I hear is how we don't make enough to cover the mortgage payment, how we're going to have to sell this house. And the dream that we built together is now going to be destroyed because we can't seem to agree on what we agreed on. Third and finally is this, when I feel like my spouse hasn't given me what I'm owed, my faith will demand my forgiveness. So this is the core of what I'm talking about today. So I'm going to say it with a disclaimer, though, because if you are not a follower of Christ, you are not obligated to what I'm about to say. Okay? More importantly, I want you to be a follower of Christ, not to get you in under this, but because it's the most important relational decision that you'll ever make. Being in a relationship with Christ will positively affect every relationship that you have. But if you are not a follower of Christ, you are not obligated to do what I'm about to say. Okay? If you're a Christian, though, if you are a follower of Christ, you are absolutely 100% mandated to do this. This is a command for you to do. You don't have the option of opting out. Because that's what sort of Christianity has become for us, is the, I like this, I opt in. And we check it. It's like we have our mouse and we just click the buttons, right? Like when you get emails and you go, I want to unsubscribe. And then it said, would you like to maybe just get an email once a month about coupons and promotions? You're like, yeah, I like coupons, but I don't want the newsletter. And we just sort of opt out. And Christianity has become that for us where we just go, oh, I don't like this. And we opt out. You don't get to opt out. When you opted into Christianity, you opted into all of it, even the hard stuff. Christ's whole mission and ministry on earth was to extend forgiveness and to release the debt of those who could not pay back their debt. The Bible says Jesus came to seek and save those that were lost. He said he came to us while we were still yet sinners. When we were undeserving, Jesus came to us for the sole purpose of releasing us from debt. Therefore, you are obligated as a follower of Christ in your marriage to live in a debt-free environment. You must, in perpetuity, that means continually, without end, be in the mode of forgiving your spouse of any debt that they owe. Gavin, you can come back up now. So as a Christ follower, you are required to say this. You, dear, honey, sweetie, schmookums, whatever it is you call your spouse, you are required to say this. You owe me nothing. You want to know what your spouse owes you? A big fat goose egg. They don't owe you anything. Well, that doesn't seem right because we committed to, listen to me. Jesus said that his mission was for us to be released of anything that we owed. You see, there was a payment, a long list of sins that we had committed against God that we needed to pay God back for. Offenses against him that we were indebted to him, and Jesus came and he erased all of that. As a matter of fact, he taught us, he said, when you pray, pray like this, and we call it the Lord's Prayer. And one of the things he says is this in Matthew 6:12, and forgive us our debts as we forgive those who owe us something. Forgive us as, listen to me, conditionally as we forgive those who owe us. Can I tell you this? That your forgiving of your spouse triggers God's forgiving of you. You go, no, that doesn't sound right. Matthew 6:15, just three verses later, Jesus, just in case we missed it, what he said, and forgive us as we forgive those who owe us something. Jesus goes, I didn't want that to get by you because I think that may have gotten by you. And he stops and he says this in Matthew 6:15, but withholding forgiveness from others, your Father withholds forgiveness from you. I want you to hear this. If you want to be forgiven by God, and listen, you do want to be forgiven by God. You want to live under God's favor. You want to live under God's grace and his forgiveness. And God will willingly give it to you as long as you willingly give it to your spouse and to others. Because if you can't do it, we'll often do for others what we won't do for our own spouse. A friend, a family member, a coworker offends us and we release it and we let it go. Our spouse does it and we've finally got ammunition that we can hold in our gunny sack and we'll use that later. But Jesus said, that's fine. You don't want to forgive your spouse. Just know that the Father will not forgive you. You go, wow, that sounds kind of mean. Except for the fact that God is the epitome. He's the standard bearer for what true, loving, genuine, authentic forgiveness and grace looks like. He said, I wanted so desperately to forgive you that I gave everything I had so that you could be forgiven. And you're not willing to give up this offense? Now you know what you need to do. I want to tell you why you need to do it. 1 Corinthians 13:5 says, love keeps no record of wrongs. Because if I tell you, you have to walk out of here and do something and you don't understand what the motive behind it is, then probably you're going to do it out of obligation and that only lasts for a week or so. And then you just go, I'm not doing that anymore. Because it does not matter how your spouse responds to your extension of forgiveness and grace and kindness and love. Because love, if you want to experience love, if you want to be an emulator of love, if you want to be an imitator of perfect love, then love is incapable of keeping records of wrong. It doesn't exist within the character of love. So it begins to take these things and voluntarily move it back into here, it begins to slide all of the expectations out of the expectation box. And it just says, I can't wait to see the exciting things that are going to happen in our marriage, but I expect nothing from my spouse. Just as God, listen to me, God expects nothing from us because there's nothing. The Bible says our righteousness are like filthy rags to God. There's nothing that we can do that will impress God enough. It's His love, it's His grace, it's His forgiveness that covers us. God gave His only Son so that He could have the joy of relationship with us, because He's not going to get the joy of sinlessness from us. He's not going to get the joy of experiencing a perfected us until we get to heaven. So God is not in relationship with us for us to act perfectly. God's in relationship with us to be in relationship with us because He loves us. And if you want to be in a loving relationship that's not driven by expectations, but driven by desires and dreams together and love, then you have to empty this box every single day. And when it feels dangerously like something's getting put back in there, you've got to, because of love, remove it. Ephesians 5:21 says this, further submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And you know why the Bible tells us to do that? Because your spouse will continue to be imperfect and they will not earn a place for you to submit. There may be some perfect people in here, and I applaud you for that. And if you are a perfect example of what a perfect marriage looks like, that's amazing. And I want to spend time with you because I want to learn more of that. But for the average relationship in here, each one of us is going to do something to disqualify ourselves as the person that our spouse would want to submit to. That's why the Bible says, out of reverence for Christ, because you go, Christ put me first when I didn't deserve to be put first. You see, lenders never submit to the borrower. So if you see yourself in the position of being one up, you're never going to come underneath your spouse, yield to your spouse. You're never going to put them first because you don't believe they deserve to be put first. That's why you have to release your spouse from any obligation. You have to forgive all debt. You have to declare in your heart, in your actions, in your mind, in your emotions, in everything, you have to declare they are debt-free. They owe you absolutely nothing. Listen to what this says, Ephesians 5:22. For wives, this means submit to your husband as to the Lord. And then it goes on one verse later to say this. And for husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. He gave up His life for her. Can I tell you the standard that's set? Is that you look at your spouse through the perfection of Christ. And you go, when it doesn't seem to make sense to yield to my spouse, to respect them or to give them or extend to them the love that they want, but I don't think they deserve, I just think, you know what? Jesus put me first when I didn't deserve to be put first. He gave up His life for mine, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to yield to my spouse. Because we talked about it last week. Tony Overbay said something important, and hopefully, I think we sold 24 books. There's maybe one copy left. And it's talking about emotional bids. Your spouse will put out an emotional bid. And sometimes it doesn't come out perfectly, but they're craving respect or they're craving love. And if we don't feel it the right way, we often don't want to give them what they want because we don't like the way they delivered the message. We come home, our wife is throwing a tantrum, she's storming around the house, and we immediately become defensive and we want to shut that down because we don't deserve it. What she's crying out and saying is, I've had a really rough day. I need help. I need sympathy. I need empathy. I need you to get into the battle with me. And we go, well, I don't like the way she's saying it. She should just greet me with that. She should just say that. Honey, I've had a really hard day. We want her to be weak and placid, but she's storming around. That just makes me angry. I just want to get out of her way. But when we stop, when we say that's exactly what we were doing when Jesus Christ gave His life for us, storming around being selfish brats, just huffing and puffing, and I want this, and I want this. And Jesus says, let me give you what you need, which is my love expressed through grace and mercy. This is hard, what I've asked you to do. It's nearly impossible to do on your own. You need the grace of Christ to be this loving and this forgiving and release your spouse. You need to be able to every day have the strength to lift this up and empty it out and keep moving this box over here and just keep redepositing stuff in there. That way, when something happens, you just go, I'm so grateful for you. I'm so thankful for you. I'm so happy that we're in this home or this home. It doesn't matter because we're building a home together. I'm so excited when I get this. And can I tell you this? When your spouse meets a desire in you, they feel a sense of satisfaction. They're motivated to continue to reach those desires in you. Nobody wants to be a debt payer. Nobody loves their mortgage. I'm so glad that we're with First U.S. Bank. I love them so much. Sometimes I want to send them extra money because I feel like they've been so good to us. Your spouse is never going to be motivated by what you owe them. But if you can tap into dreams and desires that you built together, that you've dreamed together, that maybe they haven't even experienced yet, and you tap into that and you give to that, can I tell you, it will heal your relationship. And if you can go into your marriage, if you're engaged or you're single or you're divorced and you're planning on remarrying, if you go into your marriage with this in mind, they'll never owe me a thing ever. A day in their life, they'll never owe me a thing. You will set the tone for health and strength and flourishing in your marriage. We've run just a few minutes late. Will you bow your heads, close your eyes? Thank you for letting me just take an extra couple minutes. Can I ask this? I'm not asking if your marriage is in trouble. I'm not asking if you're having a great season in your marriage. I'm not trying to evaluate or assess the health of anyone's marriage, but if you'll just say, I want to, in Jesus' name, I want to apply this to my marriage. Knowingly or unknowingly, if I've captured my spouse in some sort of debt, if I've trapped them and they owe me something, I release them in Jesus' name today. I don't want them to think they owe me a thing, and I don't want to hold my spouse. And I don't want them to think I owe them or they owe me. I want us to live in a debt-free marriage. And that's your declaration today. Would you just stick your hand up? Yeah, thanks, all over. Father, I pray for every single hand that went up today. It's a declaration to enforce strength and health in a relationship. It's a declaration that we will emulate you, that we will pattern our marriage after our relationship with you. And so, Father, give us the direction, the wisdom, the strength to know the moments that we're acting out of desire or that we're acting out of expectation, and let us suppress that expectation. Pick it up, move it back in that desire box so we can free our spouse to grow, and we can free ourselves to grow in our relationship. We expect good marriages to come out of decisions like this. In Jesus' name, amen.